Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Let's switch gears now, because we want to draw your attention to a terrific series in the LA Times. We've heard extensive reporting on the drug makers in Mexico. How are those drugs distributed in the U.S.? Well, frankly, it's astonishing. California car mechanics who build complicated systems touch a jumper cable to the front screw of a headlight and bam, a trapdoor is revealed. Psychics who put curses on law enforcement officers. Tons of cocaine hidden under frozen chickens on 18-wheelers traveling cross-country to places like Lancaster, PA. Over nearly 2 years, U.S. federal agents listened in on thousands of calls and followed hundreds of workers in the U.S. in the business of distributing drugs from Mexico. Los Angeles Times reporter Richard Morosi's four-part series about what it all reveals is called Inside the Cartel. We'll link you at hereandnow.org. As we welcome Richard Morosi from the studios of KPBS in San Diego. Welcome.
Good morning.
And Richard, this operation was called Imperial Emperor. It was run by the Drug Enforcement Agency, the target really a cartel in Mexico. But on the U.S. side, just give us a thumbnail of a man like Carlos Charlie Cuevas. You know, how did the drugs get to him and what did he do, just for instance?
Carlos Charlie Cuevas was a key link in the drug distribution train for the Sinaloa drug cartel. He was in charge with moving the drugs from Mexico into California and beyond up to the greater L.A. area. So he had a crew of about 40 drivers, lookouts, recruiters, stash house operators whose sole goal was to get the drugs across the border and into L.A. Now, they'd get these drugs, mostly cocaine, from Sinaloa, which it was shipped up in bus tires. But getting the drugs across the border into the United States a little trickier, and it was involved very intricate operations involving as many as six cartel operators at a time, following the load car where the cocaine is very well concealed in hidden compartments.
Because the directive was to keep eyes on it at all times. So, for instance, you meet an Iraq war vet who, you know, ultimately he's stung in this sting, which is why you're talking to him, but he couldn't get a job and he thought, what's the harm? I'll just be a lookout.
Exactly. It's a hard luck story. This poor guy comes back from Iraq, can't find a job. But in this area, the California desert, Imperial Valley, you're never more than 1 or 2 degrees away from somebody in the drug trade. And he had a family member who said, hey, look, hang out here. Once you see this blue Honda Accord cross, just give us a call and let us know. He figured that was the extent of it. It happened. And 2 years later, he's mentioned in a racketeering indictment with the top levels, along with top-level cartel lieutenants in Sinaloa.
Yeah. Hey, you say smugglers could be your next-door neighbor, the guy ringing you up at Walmart, the big tipper at Applebee's, the old friend at your high school reunion. And truckers like Gabriel Roman. Now, he was another transportation coordinator and moved shipments of 300 to 600 pounds of cocaine, a ton a month, to northeastern U.S. alone. So just tell us a little bit about the trucking side of this.
Yeah, Gabriel Roman operated out of Los Angeles. Once the drugs get to Los Angeles, they have to ship it to points beyond. So it's a very complicated process. He's got to line up truckers. He has to line up cover loads of frozen chicken. He has to coordinate receiving the shipments, hiding the cocaine usually in the ceiling panels or refrigeration units of these big tractor trailers. There's a lot of moving parts, and these guys sometimes are overwhelmed. They're worked very hard. They don't make a lot of money. They take a lot of risks. And oddly enough, they rely heavily on the advice of psychics, of all people.
Psychics who, they sometimes might listen to more than their drug lords back in Mexico. Psychics who might drag pigeons over people, I think it was, to remove the evil in them or put another bird's entrails in a stash house to clear it of evil spirits.
Yeah, real odd stuff. Gabriel Roman would always call his psychic when a load was getting ready to go because he wanted advice on, is this a good time? Are the stars aligning? Is it going to get busted? And in one conversation, DEA was listening in, and they could hear her toss the snail. She would read snail shells, you know, to divine the future. And they could actually hear the rattling of the snail shells.
Yeah, because
she was...
And
then her telling him to watch out.
And these workers here in the U.S., they're not making a lot of money and taking a lot of risk.
It's a very stark contrast. The drug lords in Sinaloa, they have fabulous homes. This one guy who was the head of this distribution ring had a big church on his 25-acre estate, a really beautiful cathedral-like structure. Yet the people who were working for him, you know, are barely appears to be barely scraping by in the United States. They're not paid that much. They're exposed to arrest. They're working really hard for very relatively limited rewards.
Well, but how many of them do you think there are? These lookouts, truckers. How many do you think there are?
Definitely hundreds, if not thousands. Just in this one distribution ring, they arrested more than 400 people. That involves drivers, lookouts, stash house coordinators, pilots, all sorts of people involved in this change. Like, it's not modeled on Scarface. This is UPS. This is FedEx. And they're very efficient at moving the product around the country. Right. They have to be. It's the source of their wealth, their power.
Well, so these are, really low-level workers. But then there's John Charles Ward. Now, he was once a marijuana grower. He decided to become a distributor himself. He learned how to fly, and he's flying these drugs around. He was once convicted. He got out, went back again. Is he an anomaly, or does he represent others? He lives quite well. He lived quite well before he got caught.
He was an anomaly. He was the odd guy out, really. U.S.-born white guy in, this world of largely immigrants from Sinaloa. But he had a special skill. So the cartel cultivated him. He could fly planes, and he was willing to fly planes from Southern California to a distribution hub in, of all places, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, Amish country. And he was moving 110 kilos each time and coming back with as much as $2.8 million for the cartel. He was paid well. They paid him more than the truckers because it was more efficient and deemed to be, he was less exposed to law enforcement.
Plus, he's a one-man operation, so he didn't have to split it with lookouts and all these, people packing stuff. And he was, most disturbingly, I think, aided and abetted by his attorney, a Tom Contos, a former prosecutor who he became best friends with.
Yeah, Tom Contos, he was a former federal prosecutor who helped him out in an earlier case back going 20 years ago, got him a light term. They became good friends. They opened businesses together. John Ward named his kid after Tom Contos. He called him. He was my hero, right? In the end, Tom Contos was investigated for alleged money laundering and eventually cooperated with the government, turned on John Ward, and was going to be a witness against him. And he told the authorities that he had buried money in his yard. So they dug up his yard looking for money. They never found money in the yard, but they did find money in his in the freezer in a bag of walnuts, $65,000. So to John Ward, he felt betrayed by his former friend, this criminal defense attorney who had helped him out so many times.
Well, Richard Morosi, I mean, you hinted at how fast this distribution of drugs is in the U.S. I mean, you've only written about this one network, hundreds of people, trucks, planes, cars, and you write about the DEA officers whose goal was to eavesdrop on all these cell phone conversations so that they could get to the top in Mexico. And they do have a successful sting in many ways, but it seems like whack-a-mole. It's staggering when we read the tonnage, that's coming into the U.S. I mean, I just found myself thinking, who's using this?
Yeah, as hard as these guys work and as clever as they their operations are in peeling back the layers of this distribution system, the cocaine just keeps pouring through. Three, 4 years later after this operation ended, this port of entry there in Calexico, California, is still the main entry point for cocaine. And the Sinaloa cartel continues to pour cocaine through that port of entry. It's going all across the country. So in that three-year time period of this investigation, they estimated this ring imported about 40 tons of cocaine. Can you imagine how much cocaine that is? Presumably, there's users on the other end of it. Where it's going exactly, we don't know. What's interesting, the Sinaloa drug cartel is strictly wholesale business. They will not handle street-level dealings. They just sell the cocaine to any local powers that be. In the New York area, they partnered with Dominican organized crime groups. In Baltimore, it was black groups. In Orange County, it was Mexican-Americans. In Canada, it was Italian-Canadian mobsters. So it's a smart business model the way they see it, because it limits their exposure, and it's not as messy, unlike organized crime groups in the past. For instance, the Colombians who tried to control the entire distribution chain right down to the street, it got real messy, it got really bloody, and it drew a lot of attention to their operations.
Well, I just want to, just in the minute we have, you also point out that how on the U.S. side, it's become more civil. It's more like a business. And yet, some of the people who are, in charge of some of these workers are considered the nicest people in their neighborhoods. And yet, they still answer to these drug lords back in Mexico.
That's by design. You know, they don't want a lot of attention on the north side of the border. It's a business. They realize this. If there are issues, they will call their workers back to Sinaloa to settle it there. And there, they do threaten, they do intimidate, they do kill in some instances. But it's by design. You don't see a lot of violence connected with these wholesale distribution networks in the United States for the Sinaloa drug cartel.
As you said, it's more like UPS for cocaine. Richard Morosi, staff writer for the Los Angeles Times, a fascinating four-part series on the DEA operation that showed just how drugs are distributed on the streets of, say, Lancaster, Pennsylvania and Compton, California. Richard, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.